Welcome to Path to Story, a Warhammer Age of Sigmar Path to Glory podcast, where we focus on the lore, rules, and storytelling of narrative play. Thank you for joining us once again as we pitch our tents, set up camp, and share our tales from along the path to story. Your companions around the campfire this episode are...
Hey, I'm Paul, but today I am Yegrol Crossclaw, malevolent gatekeeper of the Eon Haunted Chalice.
It's a chalice that's been haunted for eons, and has a gatekeeper.
It's a pretty big chalice.
My mind went to Crossclaw, and that this is an unreleased lobster people faction,
right?
Ooh, fish people, finally.
Or it's just the crab from the Warhammer Underworld Warband as an army.
Dwinclaw.
Yeah, Dwinclaw.
I buy that.
Absolutely. Flesh out that faction. The Dwinclaw faction. Yeah. Well, I'm Harry, but today I'm Jagazel Serpentthorn, Pale Torturer of the Flawless Meat Caravan.
Ooh. That went a different way than I thought it was going after her Serpentthorn. Right. The Flawless Meat Caravan?
Yes.
Very interesting. I'm all, like Slaneshi ogres.
I'm the Pale Torturer of the Flawless Meat Caravan.
I'm just thinking it's the halfling homunculi thing that is giving all the food to... I can't think of his name. The Slaneshi guy in the chariot.
Oh, right.
It's just you have to have the Flawless Meat Caravan trailing behind to supply them with all the foods.
Yeah, you don't want to ask about the provenance of the meat in the Flawless Meat Caravan.
Also, I love the idea that like he's pale, so like he's got either an umbrella or something over him at all times. He's like, I torture people, but only when there is no sun.
Right.
I burn easily for my torturing. Yeah.
I don't like going outside. I stay in the Flawless Meat Caravan. And I'm Will, but today I'm Malyra Snake Scream, Dark Executioner of the Serpentine Massacre.
The Serpentine Massacre.
Interesting.
It would be an interesting name for an army, right? The Serpentine Massacre.
Ooh, yeah. And they show up and they're not serpentine. And no. You're asking these questions and you realize that they're hunting serpents.
I was thinking serpentine as in like they never walk in a straight line. They're always zigzagging back and forth, like running into each other. Or
they're nomadic,
coordinated and like not running into each other, but just like you can't follow where each one is going.
Mm. Would you say they walk without rhythm?
Yes, they walk without
rhythm. Shai Hulud cannot find them.
Oh, God. Okay.
Yes, I saw Dune recently.
Oh.
I was going for Cool Runnings, but I'll take Dune.
That's nice. Yeah. I love Cool Runnings. There needs to be a Cool Runnings themed warband. Just throwing that out there.
Yes, what we need in Warhammer is bobsleds.
Bobsleds. You get an action warband and throw them in Andor and see what happens.
Right. I was going to say, how else do you stay ahead of the Everwinter if not with bobsleds?
I mean, that'd be pretty sweet.
Right? All right. And then if you'd like to share your stories with us, you can head on over to our Twitter at Path to Story, or you can chat with us on our Discord at themortalrealms.com/Discord. You can also check out the other shows in the Mortal Realms Network at themortalrealms.com. We've got the Mortal Realms Story Phase to embrace the lore of the Age of Sigmar, What the Hex to delve deep into Warhammer Underworlds, and the Dogs of Warcry to cry havoc and embrace the skirmish battles of Warcry. Consider leaving us a positive review on your podcast platform of choice, or you can leave a tip over on our Patreon at immortalrealms.com/Patreon. Fellas, how are you doing today?
Well, actually, I wanted to add one more thing to there.
Yes.
If you're feeling spicy, you can go over to YouTube on, I think it's Tuesdays, and Skylar's been doing a What the Dex stream. So yes, that's another Underworlds thing going on. So you might want to check that out.
Well, nice.
Yeah, I haven't been able to catch it, but he builds decks live, right? Mm-hmm. That's the general gist of it. Yeah, so if you like Underworlds and you like the process of deck building and the thoughts that go into it, this is a great opportunity to see one of the experts go at it.
Exactly. So, sorry for that interruption, but
no, he's it's doing great.
Something fun. So,
and it should be rewarded.
All right.
And on that note, we can mosey into our updates in the workshop, which is where we show off the progress we've made in our armies and share the stories we've created. Harry, it's been a little bit since we last saw you. What have you been working on lately?
Yeah, a couple months. So aside from getting distracted, as always, with other great games that Games Workshop releases, namely the Horus Heresy.
How dare you?
I know. which, yeah, I can give that update on another podcast if we ever branch way, way out. but aside from that, really what I've been doing is my son and I have gotten to do some really cool hobby related travel in the last few months.
Oh, fun.
So in December, as part of a family vacation that we were taking, we spent a little bit of time in the UK and we went up to Nottingham for a couple of days and we were able to go and visit Warhammer World.
Nice.
And I've got to say, it's every bit as awesome as we had hoped it would be. Spent probably a good 2/3 of the day there, and that was probably the minimum amount of time I would say that you could spend there. I really think to get the most enjoyment out of it, you've got to plan a full day or two. Would probably be better if you're, especially if you're traveling from abroad. Definitely, you know, spend time in Bugman's. The food is amazing. The beer was great. The gaming hall is immense and every table looked amazing. And then the exhibition hall is just absolutely wonderful. It's a museum to Warhammer is what it is.
Yeah. Oh, that's so cool.
And so being able to go and see models that, you know, I've looked at in publications for decades now and actually see those dioramas in person was just unreal. It was incredible. And then they've got every current model in production painted up and on display at some place in the exhibition hall.
Oh, wow.
So it was just incredible.
Did you perchance remember seeing the infamous footnotes that existed?
Yeah, I did. Yeah. Seeing that in person was amazing. Oh, yeah. I've probably got a picture of it here somewhere on my phone. Oh,
perfect.
Yeah, I saw that. And I also got to see Louis Sugden's Zinch models in person.
Oh, that's amazing.
Those are incredible. Even the one that she painted entirely inverse colors. So yep. Yeah. That's just incredible to see in person.
It's just a wild idea. Yeah. Like the creativity out of that place is phenomenal.
It really is. It really is. And then just to be somewhere where they pretty much have every model available for purchase in the store part, it was great too.
Uh-huh.
We didn't really pick up any crazy purchases. I did get the Warhammer World exclusive Stormcast.
Oh, nice.
To join my Stormcast army, my Hammers of Sigmar. And then my son picked up a Wind Mage that he'd been looking for. Not exclusive, but that was his one to remember Warhammer World.
Yeah.
But what we did pick up that we haven't been able to find anywhere locally was Soulbound, the role-playing game. They have the Soulbound books there, several of the expansions as well. So we picked up the core book and Era of the Beast because he wants to play as Illumineth. a lore nice. Seeker. And so we were able to dip our toes into Age of Sigmar role-playing on that trip, which was a lot of fun.
That's awesome.
And also, while we were there, we did get a game in, as is proper. So we took a small force of his Lumineth and a small force of my Slaves to Darkness, and we reserved a table ahead of time. The staff there are great. If you just email them and let them know that you're going to be visiting, they can reserve a table for you at whatever time you're planning to arrive. So we had reserved the River of Souls table, which is a Shaishian themed table that has this really neat like tomb pyramid type structure in the middle of the table, and then this green river full of ethereal spirits coming out of it, flowing through the middle of the board, and there are a couple bridges and stuff. So it was a really fun thematic table to play on.
That's awesome.
That's super cool.
And so we took our armies there. Because we had spent so much time at Bugman's and the exhibition hall, we didn't have a ton of time to play a really complex battle. So we just picked one of the bridges and went and fought over it.
Nice.
So his Lumineth charged forward into mine. He had taken a force that was mostly specialists. So it was some of his Blade Lords and the guys with the hammers, the stone.
Yeah, the Alarith
Stone. Alarith Stone Guard.
Yes.
Is that right? Yeah. Alarith Stone Guard, and then his Lore Seeker, of course, to lead them. And they went up against I took two units of Dark Oath Savagers and one unit of Chaos Warriors. And I had my War Queen that I've talked about before, as well as a Chaos Sorcerer Lord. So he charged forward, surprisingly, into my Chaos Warriors, who were holding the middle of their side of the bridge. And then I was able to kind of divide his forces, force him to choose between going after one unit of the Dark Oath or the other side. And that left the other ones available to kind of flank around. And so in the end, it didn't end well for the Lumineth, but it was a closer battle than I expected. His heroes, because he had taken a Stone Mage as well. I forgot that. So his Stone Mage and his Lore Seeker managed to make quick work of most of my line troops. And so by the end of it, it was pretty much just hero on hero. And again, as is fitting. And so my War Queen and his Lore Seeker dueled on the bridge.
Nice.
While the rest of the fight was finishing up. And in the end, the War Queen was able to come out on top in that duel and win the battle. But it was a costly one for my Chaos Warriors.
That's awesome. And we'll definitely talk about it here in the next segment. But it sounds like those Dark Oath are going to need some reinforcements.
Oh, absolutely. They absolutely will. So that was that trip. There was one other trip that we made here recently, last month, actually. We headed over to Dallas as kind of a late birthday celebration for my son. We went to the Citadel Cafe that is there in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. And I think the town is Grapevine, Texas. And while not quite as impressive as Warhammer World, it's definitely a bit more affordable to visit when you're on this side of the pond. and it's still an incredible experience. They've got a great gaming area. They have a wonderful coffee shop in there that is just as high quality as any of your franchise coffee shops that I will not name.
Fair enough.
But it's more affordable. Actually the drinks they had in there were great. Unfortunately, being the US, they didn't serve alcohol, but
no.
but it was a very fun place to be. So we just were there for the afternoon. So we ended up playing a game of Silver Tower. We had taken my copy of that out there. And so we ran through one of the levels of that. My son and I and my wife played that. And my wife actually won that. She got the shard of Akshi, I think it was.
Or maybe nice.
Hish. Maybe the shard of Hish. But still, we had a lot of fun. It was a good, fun time. Again, they've got pretty much everything that GW currently sells is available for purchase in person there, including tons of Forge World stuff. So it just really cool experiences. And then the last thing of note that I've got on that is we finally got a Warhammer store here locally.
Ooh, that's
cool. Oh.
Two dangerous, but awesome. Weeks ago, 3 weeks ago.
Wow.
So yeah, we picked up the store opening Stormcast from that. That was a lot of fun. So now, yeah, probably 15 minutes away from our house, we've got a Warhammer store, and it's been busy every day that we go by there. So lots of popularity. Considering the closest one before was 3 hours away in Albuquerque.
Oof.
This is a pretty big deal. I mean, we've got some great, you know, friendly local game stores that we enjoy supporting here as well. But it is nice to have an official store.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. That's awesome. That sounds like an amazing time. So I remember when I went to Warhammer World, and even without the exhibition hall, they still had like the actual models that they painted up and photographed for all of the battle tomes and everything. And I remember just being like, oh, because they had like, did they still have the Dogs of War and everything out from the old world?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, like those were my favorite. Like the ones that you're just like, nobody has these and they're just gorgeously painted. Yeah. So.
Yep. That's amazing. They had like multiple iterations of like Tyrion and Teclis all hanging out in one cabinet together. It's
that's awesome.
There was so much nostalgia just walking through there.
That's awesome.
Well, and I don't know why I didn't consider it, but it makes perfect sense that of course Warhammer World would have themed tables that you can reserve.
Mm-hmm.
For some reason, it's going to be like a more open gaming space.
So they have both. Yeah.
Oh, awesome.
Their gaming space, their gaming hall is so large that they probably have, if I were to venture a guess, between 20 and 30 tables total in there. And about a third of those are themed, pre-built. Like you can move maybe a little bit of the terrain, but it's pretty set how it is. Mm-hmm. And then the other ones, the other two thirds are mats and movable terrain.
Gotcha. I think that must be what I'm thinking of because I know I've seen people from Nottingham post pictures like, I went to Warhammer World just to play a pickup game. And
And the other thing too at the Citadel Cafe in Grapevine is several of those tables. In fact, I'd say most of those tables are pre-built, pre-themed tables, which are, again, just incredible. They had one that was like a Gurish swamp that had water effects everywhere, like clear water effects too. So it looked like the water was maybe an inch or two deep. But your guys would run across the top of it, of course. And there were all these little islands with twisted trees and such. And then they had a Warhammer 40,000 board that had probably 6 or 7 story buildings.
Oh, wow. On it
that all crumbled down and ruins everywhere and statues. Yeah. They really went all out with those tables.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
I definitely have to go now.
I thought you were about, I'm done recording. Like, I just have to go think about that for a minute.
I definitely have to go.
Go to the airport.
I'll see y'all later. Like, I'll be back.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. Paul, what about you? What have you been working on lately?
Not too much. We've had some real life stuff going on, so I've had painting every day, but it's just kind of like little upgrades and stuff. I finished off a conversion I did of a Black Library character the vampire who doesn't kill bad people.
Oh. Yeah, Cato Ezekiel.
Cato, there we go.
Hollow King.
Thank you for that. I made a conversion a while ago of Cato, and I put him into my Harkiron army, and I finally got around to actually painting him up. So that was pretty sweet. I'm very happy with that conversion. So
he's a great model.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the conversion looks great because you've got like the Bident from the like the chariot case from the Scourge Privateers, I think.
Yeah. Across his back. Like it, and I made a little custom little pier base for him because I'm trying to do some fancy stuff with the bases on my heroes. So I was telling Will that I think it'd be fun to do a hero model to lead all of my individual units. So my champion will actually be on a slightly bigger base, but like also look a lot cooler because I just think it would look awesome to have my army. So yeah. Will, how about you? What have you been working on?
I have just been working on ghouls. What I should have been working on is Krathusa, which Games Workshop has sent us a copy to review. Thank you. Sorry, but I didn't touch it. Because even yet. Though I said yeah, I haven't touched you, it yet.
Right.
I'll talk in a minute about my plans for her, which are great. But in December, we recorded the Sigmar Narelia episode, and I said I was going to paint my ghoul army. And from December up until March, when Adepticon is, I started painting them 5 days ago. but I'm actually getting close to done, and I'm going to meet the deadline.
Nice.
Which I'm happy about. I actually just finished everything. Right now, it's just finishing the skin final touches and then basing.
So you're not going to be painting in the hotel?
I mean, I probably will because I want it to look like nicer, but I won't need to.
There you go. There you go.
And that's the crucial difference. But yeah, it's been my girlfriend has been helping me out, and it's like that scene from Enemy at the Gates where it's like, all right, we got two people for every model. You get a paintbrush, you get a base spreader. When the first person's done, the next person steps in.
Nice. But Adepticon's right around the corner, right?
Yeah, like 2 weeks.
Week and a half. One week and four days.
I wish that was local for me.
It's so nice to have it be local, but also it's so stressful. You're like, oh, I got to do all these things. So
right.
Yeah, it's local enough that we can drive to it, but not local enough where I still need to get a hotel room.
Yeah.
It's exactly. Right in that sweet spot.
Oh, I'd probably get a hotel room anyway, just to be there and part of it, you know?
Yeah.
And to have somewhere to retreat to in the middle of the day.
Exactly. Well, and I got the room at a hotel that's like right next to the venue, but not the one that is the venue. Which means I won't have to listen to all the people making noise when I want to go to bed.
all the other people painting in their rooms.
Yeah, exactly.
You'd be surprised how loud some of these people paint. I mean, it's crazy.
Right? Well, I've been there when the hotel lobby like had to quiet a bunch of people because they were making too much noise. Oh, so I was the person making this? Too much noise. But
I feel called out, Will. Just saying.
I'm just saying, but it wasn't your fault, but you did supply the guitars. yeah, I'm very excited, and I'm just making sure everything is perfect and ready. And then when that is done for Krathusa, I want to add her to my Fortress Librarium, which is like all of my old city elves who are been recently removed from the book. They're all now going to be Shadow Stalkers. Because the lore for that army is, it includes Shadow Stalkers. It developed from a paint scheme, which is, what if instead of having Shadow Demons as their cloaks, they had Nighthaunt Geists as their cloaks that they controlled?
Interesting.
And so it's these elves who can manipulate spirits in that way. And who better to lead them than a crone seer?
Right. No, I like that.
Yeah. Very excited. And I already have a good chunk of it painted, so I'm not starting a new project. I'm adding on to an existing one.
Man. So it's Daughters of Cain, but what if instead of Olgu, Shaiish?
Yeah. And it had started as a city of Sigmar, but since now those models no longer cities of Sigmar. they're just going to be elves.
Yeah.
I'm here for it, though. I'm excited.
I know it's been a few months, but I'm still a little sad at some of the units that left that battle tome.
R.I.P.
But we have a new game to play them in, so that's pretty nice. Maybe. Hopefully.
Maybe.
Yeah. I was like, what?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not as enthusiastic about the old world as some people. Like, I love the setting. Yeah. Right? Yep. You know, like, I love the setting.
Uh-huh.
But I can play those armies on realm bases with AOS rules and be happy. I don't.
Yeah.
It took me a full minute to realize that you were talking about the old world. There's a new game coming?
Yeah.
Well,
I mean, I'm not complaining that they re-released Bretonnians as models.
Oh, gosh.
I love
it. So good.
But for me, the problem is it still doesn't solve my principal issue with the old world, which is where there's still not enough gaps. Like, we know what's going on. And like, I love the, like, you can kind of do anything with AOS.
Oh, right? Yeah.
There's still, like, all of these lore expectations for the old world, even though they went back in time, and even though they're making it very clear that, like, it's not quite the same, right? It's just, it's not making me excited to do it. I'll play it probably a couple times, but it's just not my favorite. My favorite stuff is the crazy, just like, where did you come up with that kind of idea? So,
Yeah.
And I mean, I told the local guys, like, if they really want to play Old World and they're cool with some of the armies that I have, because I have tons of models that fit Old World armies, I'm probably going to make bases, like trays that fit my round bases, or just magnetic trays to hold them in roughly block formations.
Yeah.
And I'll play like that. But I'm not rebasing my models. I love them on round bases. And then
better, unfortunately, for old. They still look much better on round bases.
Yep. And then, you know, I'm already scratching that old man desire to play historicals by playing Horus Heresy. So
exactly.
Yeah. I say for me, it's just the rules. I just like the AOS rules, and that's pretty much the only difference. But I did have a bunch of Corsairs that were on square bases. Now they're Paul's problem.
Yay! That makes me happy. Been trying to get as many Corsairs. Yeah, I've been trying to grab as many Corsairs as I can for my Harkurine army. So.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
And I had 30 Corsairs I wasn't using, which I need to ask questions to myself of how do I have 30 Corsairs that I'm not using? And with that, I think we can move on to a new segment, and a segment that I think we kind of love doing anyways before it was named, which is the Scrying Chamber. And in the Scrying Chamber, we try to divine what lies in store for us in the future of Age of Sigmar. I added this for two reasons. Reason one is mostly for Harry, because he collects Dark Oath. And we recently had the new Dark Oath box announced.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. Man. When I saw the announcement on the community page, what was it, last week?
Yeah.
All I could think, besides just like pure giddiness, was this is what I've wanted. Like, this is what I've wanted since I started building a Hordes of Chaos army back in when it was Warhammer Fantasy Battles. You know, probably, goodness,
I totally did that
fifth edition, you know, like, this is what I wanted was hordes of barbarians that look awesome.
Yeah.
You know, sweeping out of the hinterlands to raid and pillage.
Yeah.
And they'd already teased some of this. I mean, the preview video that they had was full of clips from a Hammer and Bolter episode, which if you haven't seen, stop what you're doing, subscribe to Warhammer Plus, go watch the Hammer and Bolter episode, Monsters.
Yep.
It's just incredible. But they had teased this to us. They'd shown us, like, these are really cool Dark Oath. This is how Dark Oath society is. Aren't they really cool? And we're like, yeah, but it's just a warband in Warcry.
Right.
at a couple of heroes. Where's the army? And so now we have that. Now we're getting that army. And in fact, it's taking that those older concepts of the Marauders and the Marauder Horsemen that we had in fantasy, and we poured it over into Age of Sigmar when it started. Goodness, almost 10 years ago now.
Yeah.
Right. And now they've updated those models, but they're keeping the unit concept. So if you've got old Marauders, you can play them.
Yep.
If you've got old Marauder Horsemen, you can play them. They're still going to work.
Mm-hmm.
Just like they've done with the Cities of Sigmar updates, some of the other updates that we've seen, the Seraphon updates, you can use your old models. They're going to work as the new units. But these new units, we've got the Dark Oath Marauders. They've mm-hmm. even kept the name. And the Dark Oath Fell Riders, I believe,
yep.
is the name of their cavalry. And the Marauders, the Dark Oath Marauders, can be armed with hand weapons and shields or spears. Mm-hmm. So you've got a little more variety than we had before, because we didn't used to have spearmen as mm-hmm. barbarians. So that's going to be really, really fun. And the models are exactly in line with what we've got from the Dark Oath Savagers, which I assume is still going to be a unit mm-hmm. in this new army.
Yeah.
And they previewed the absolutely incredible Dark Oath Chieftain on Warsteed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So now we've got a mounted hero to lead the army. The only thing I'm really fingers crossed in this supplement that they're releasing with it is that they have some Path to Glory in there. So I want to see how you can take your Dark Oath Chieftain on Warsteed, and or first the Dark Oath Chieftain on foot and upgrade him to a Chieftain on Warsteed. That's a logical progression there. But yeah. then take him and maybe have him progress into a Chaos Lord on a Demonic Mount or on Carcadrack or something like that. So you can move through that whole progression even more clearly now with the models they have available.
Yeah, yep. I would love that. Well, and I love, I mean, there's a lot of things I love, but since we're talking about the supplement itself, I think we talked about it when the Iron Jaws Battle Tome supplement came out, but I'll just reiterate it if we did. I love the idea of them just doing a PDF supplement instead of another Battle Tome. I think that's probably feedback that I got from the Lumineth double release in second edition, right. and they corrected it. And I think the way they corrected it is phenomenal. Because it was just a year, less than a year and a half ago, that the Slaves of Darkness got a Battle Tome and got an army box. So it's cool that they aren't going to wait 3 years for the next Battle Tome. You're getting an army box, and you're getting those models, and you're getting rules. It's awesome. I love it.
That's awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. Man, I'm still giddy about it. it's just so cool. This is the army that I want to play. It's the army that I was effectively building, I had a unit of Marauders and a unit of Marauder Horsemen, and then I had two units of the Dark Oath Savagers. These new models just blow the old Marauders out of the water.
Well, and it's super cool. Because they're less ordered. Obviously, they're the tribes, but the amount of diversity in the sculpts is, I think, great, because you've got like super yoked men and women, but you've also got, I think it's like the standard bearer is like a bodybuilder type, but on a female model. She's just huge, and it's just great to see them expanding what you can see on the battlefield in that variety.
Right, and it's great that you mentioned that it's men and women. The line troops, the Marauders and the Fell Riders, are a clear mix, just like we have with the Steel Helms for the Cities of Sigmar. It's a clear mix of both men and women in their or presenting male and presenting female models in there. And so it's a lot more diversity than we had in the older sculpts. Yeah. And that's incredible. There's also a lot of diversity of facial features in these models. So you're seeing what we would read as different ethnicities within these models.
It's just awesome. I don't think we've seen something that's been so crazy and fun and different in a long time. This is a release that I think we've just kind of been waiting for, right?
Yeah.
It's just, we're seeing so many different things in so many different ways, and that's just amazing.
Yeah.
It doesn't even look like an army, really. It looks like something completely different. And
right.
Yeah.
It's also that there are so many other minis that we have already that have been released that are now apparently going to be doing things like Torgar Split Eye, etc. Right. Mm-hmm. So we're going to have so much fun with this.
Yeah. And the one thing I didn't even mention is, because I'm still surprised by this piece of it, is the Wilder Fiends.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, oh my gosh.
When I watched the episode of Monsters and they had the Wilder Fiend in there, I thought that was like a one-off, like this is what this one tribe is dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it still made sense. Like, here's this crazy issue that the Dark Oath have to deal with as they're trying to make their way through the mortal realms. But to have it be a more pervasive and common thing to the Dark Oath across the mortal realms, to the point where you can have different Wilder Fiends in your army representing these, spoiler alert, mutated members of their tribe.
Yeah.
Who have turned into not Chaos Spawn, but something a lot more nefarious.
Mm-hmm.
Is really incredible. And the sculpt they went with and the options that you have on that sculpt is really, really cool.
Yeah. Well, and I love because their narrative is similar to Chaos Spawn in a few ways. And I like the idea of like, oh, we have an AOS version of that now, because the Chaos Spawn models are old and they're from 40K and, you know, Warhammer Fantasy Battles. And now we've got like a distinctly AOS version on the trope of you let down the Chaos powers and now they're going to mutate you. And we see this new version of that, which I think is really cool.
Yeah.
Right. Right. The other thing that they previewed a little bit before this, and I still can't wrap my mind around where this is going to fit in, is the specific characters from that episode of Hammer and Bolter,
yep.
Gunnar Brand and his Oathbound.
Yeah. Oathsworn.
Oathsworn, sorry.
Which is a great ska name
that's
out there. Gunnar Brand and the Oathsworn.
I was thinking more like death metal, but I'll go with that too.
I just feel like death metal wouldn't have that title structure, but that's the music they would do.
So what's got me confused is they showed the novel that they're releasing for him along with that, called Dark Oath, which I'll definitely be getting. But they showed the models, but everything just has the Age of Sigmar branding on it. It doesn't say Warcry. It doesn't say Underworlds. It's just Age of Sigmar. So like, it seems like it would be a warband for one of the smaller skirmish games, or are we getting a unique warband that's just for Age of Sigmar? So, I mean, I'm here for it.
That kind of ties into what I really like about this release, which is they're not the only warband that's like this. We've got the Black Talons, which is like a squad, like an adventuring party squad.
That's true.
That came out with Dawnbringers and premiered in the Warhammer Plus TV show.
So correct. Did they just give us the Warcry rules for the Black Talons after the fact?
Yeah, like they came out at the same time, but they were released as an Age of Sigmar
group
with the Dawnbringer book. And then we've got Kallus and Tol, who had a Warhammer Plus Hammer and Bolter episode.
Oh,
with their little adventuring party.
The Saviors of Hammerhall.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And now we have these guys who were a Warhammer plus Hammer and Bolter adventuring party. Every Age of Sigmar, Hammer and Bolter, or Warhammer plus show has models tied to it, except for the missing link, which is
Hamilcar.
Hamilcar Barrier.
Hamilcar Barrier.
He's got it. He's the last one now. We've established a pattern. Close it out.
I get it. I hear you, GW. Like, you let the sculptors sculpt what they want. But, like, the people have spoken, and they've spoken for a long time now. We need Hamilcar Barrier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm going to have to contradict you slightly here. Don't all right. Well, because there is one more unit that we've seen, we just haven't seen released. You know what that is?
No.
The Cogfort.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. No, that, sure. And we, I know that people were speculating when Cities of Sigmar was being redone because of that episode of Hammer and Bolter, that we were going to see Cogforts. And
maybe
we got that new look to the steel helms. We've got a lot more black powder.
I think there's still time in the future. Yeah.
There's still time. Battle Tome supplement.
Right.
Battle Cogfort. Cogfort. That's it. Nothing else. But you get
just
to
a Cogfort and a whole
17
book.
Different upgrades that you can do to it.
Oh yeah.
Like that completely pie in the sky, right? But what if this is how Path to Glory goes moving forward, right? You actually get to buy a stronghold, and then you get to upgrade it as you do things in the system.
Like, that'd be crazy.
Imagine having a cog fort that you just get to upgrade every time you do something better in your city.
Stronghold in my Path to Glory? No, wait. I'm sorry. The producers are handing me a note. We're scratch that.
wait. No. Hold on. Yeah. So this is the first new army that we've seen, complete new army, essentially, right? And it really makes me wonder what are we going to get next? Because this is awesome. There's so much passion. There is so much individuality and so much character to every single one of these sculpts.
Absolutely.
It's just, it's going to be amazing. And the thing that I love is I made my own version of this army in Warhammer Fantasy Battles. I got the War Mammoth and then I got a bunch of chariots and then I got a bunch of marauders and I got a bunch of horsemen. And I love seeing GW do this in a new way, because I could do that with the old marauders. But I could not envision the way they're making them into something new, right?
Right.
And this is so much cooler than what I did. And it's
don't sell yourself short, Paul.
I mean, I'm
sure what you did was very cool.
When I made it 10 years ago, yeah, it was awesome. Yeah. It was super fun, and I had a great time playing games. But I even put a Wilder Fiend in it, but I didn't call it a Wilder Fiend. I called it something else. But I had my own demon spawn thing that I was using, and. Yeah, so...
Hey, I mean, mine's going to look a little bit like, actually a lot like, an old Fen Beast.
Yeah.
Ooh, just saying.
Yeah.
Just saying. Man, I had a thought, and then it just... Oh, I was going to say, I know we've already talked about the Noah Van Wynn Dark Oath novel, which is slipping my mind, but... I remember when we talked about it before. God Eater Son. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. And reading that or listening to it, like my son and I did, it was an awesome story of just survival in the mortal realms, right? We talked about how this was a picture of what happened when you were kind of outside of Sigmar's light, but still just trying to make your way in the mortal realms. And how is it that relatively well-intended people end up becoming slaves to darkness? Noah just does an amazing job of laying that out in that novel. But then you go back to the game itself, and the miniatures line just didn't let you reflect that very well.
Yeah.
You had to kind of build that yourself with the model kits that were out. And now we've got the army that shows us what that looks like. even in the Gunnar Brand's warband, you've got a guy that they say is a fallen Axian noble.
Yeah.
And who can mingle with the reclaimed without being noticed, because he doesn't have any outward signs of being a chaos worshiper.
Here's the wild thing. So for my Flesh Eater courts, I use Dark Oath models for that reason. For me, like, oh, the Dark Oath people in my Flesh Eater courts are recently taken in. They're not fully ghouls yet, and they're allowed to go into Cities of Sigmar unnoticed.
Oh, man.
So the fact that they like did that with new Dark Oath models, like, that's I need to get it now. Like, I need it.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Speaking of not trusting Sigmar, right? I feel like we just got something today.
Oh, man.
That might be fun talking about.
Day. Yeah. There was a video teaser that was just released. It showed a cobblestone street in a Sigmarite settlement. You can kind of see, I think, lava on the mountains in the background. Like little red lines of energy. And it just says, Sigmar lied. As you hear bells tolling in the background and rats scrabbling along the street.
And it does end with a lightning strike.
With lightning strike, yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We don't see what comes down.
We don't. It's definitely a mystery. And maybe by the time you hear this, you know the answer to the mystery. But us recording it right now, we don't know. So we're going to speculate.
Yeah, it says 10 days from now, and we're recording it now. So now you'll know the production pipeline.
So by the time Adepticon actually hits, we're going to find out what this is about.
Yeah.
I think we've been going along for the ride on the Dawnbringer series, and we understand that these narrative series that Games Workshop produces for their headline games like Age of Sigmar and Warhammer 40,000 usually do prequel and edition change. And we've talked about that before. I think we all safely know that fourth edition Age of Sigmar is coming. So probably has something to do with that. But what exactly that has to do with Sigmar and whether or not he's telling the truth, that's a little mysterious.
That's what I want to know, because there are like a few like lies that I know Sigmar has done, but none big enough for an edition change. Like, he lied to the elves about the Enlightenment engines, and then he turned them into Penumbral engines and did the whole Stormvault nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't feel like that's right for an edition change.
Right. And we know that Ionis Cryptborn is on a special mission. You know, it has some to do with saving his friend Vandis.
Yeah.
But it also has to do with this bigger issue of the more reforging happens, the less and less stable the Stormcasts become. So maybe it has something to do with that, the longevity or the eternal part of the Stormcast Eternal. You know, maybe there is a limit to the amount that they can be reforged safely.
You
know,
you say the eternal part, and all I think of is Eternus.
Hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Hmm.
One of Bellicor's highest lieutenants. You know what? He has this weird affinity for lightning, too. Granted, this is black lightning, and they're showing white lightning, but that could be an easy misnomer.
Yeah. My joke answer is that he's lying about the age of Sigmar itself. He's not actually 35 like he's telling people. He's a few years older.
A few years. I have seen some quick speculation in the comment sections on various social media platforms. Some people got really excited about the sound of rats squeaking in the background. I mean, rats running through the streets has been a very common Warhammer theme since the beginning of Warhammer. So maybe not. I mean, trust me, I'm as on board for a resculpt of the Skaven as anybody at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know that Clan Eshin especially is rocking some models that would be old enough to drink in the U.S. But I don't know if, you know, a couple of rats scurrying by is enough to indicate that the Skaven are going to be part of whatever this surprise is.
Yeah, it seems like it's more focused on the lightning, if I'm honest.
That's what I'm thinking.
Chaos Stormcast?
I mean, maybe.
Probably not, but...
Yeah.
Maybe.
I mean, if we wanted to get really wild, like really wild here.
Let's do it. That's what we're here for. It'll pay off more if it's true.
We go the route of Rebel Stormcasts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe not necessarily Chaos Stormcast, but Rebel Stormcast.
Because they never agreed.
An actual war between various Stormcasts.
Yeah. Well, because the Stormcast never agreed to be Stormcast. They worshipped Sigmar and they were taken and they were reforged. And he probably removed the parts of them that would have disagreed.
Right.
But there have been Black Library short stories and characters here and there that pop up that kind of don't like Sigmar because of what he did to them.
Right.
But they're too focused on fighting Chaos. What if with the Dawnbringer Crusades doing well enough, they're not that focused on that anymore and they can take some time to deal with what happened and rebel against Sigmar?
Here's a question. In the last edition, the last couple years of Age of Sigmar lore, do the Grand Alliances really play a role in the storytelling?
So, sort of. Pretty much every Grand Alliance except for Order.
Right.
Because, with Grand Alliance death, all is Nagash, and Nagash is all, because he can literally exert his control over
everything. Right.
So that's a Grand Alliance. But story-wise, they haven't... I mean...
And Chaos, it's pretty obvious. Like, if you're a Chaos Worshipper, you're part of Grand Alliance Chaos.
Yeah.
Destruction was always...
an alliance when it's literally just forcing everybody to do whatever he wants.
Right.
Yeah, right. Well, that's kind of how Destruction works, too. They're not... They don't have, political treaties or anything. But any Destruction faction will follow any Destruction leader who is tough enough.
Right. And when...
the respect...
Back when Age of Sigmar started, ostensibly Destruction factions all worshipped Gorka Morka in some manner.
I would say they still do now.
But we've introduced Kragnos as an alternative Destruction god. The Bad Moon has always been kind of the guiding light for the Gloom Spike gets.
I like what you did.
Right? You like that? you know, and we, you know, they explained it off as Gorka Morka had something to do with the Bad Moon. But really, in their minds, it's a separate entity. It effectively is. All I'm saying is, if we're going into a new edition, do we really need keyword Grand Alliances or Grand Alliance keywords? Could we move away from that? Could we move into an era of more political intrigue and more factionalism by downplaying or getting rid of the Grand Alliances and just looking at the individual factions now that we've solidified the Battletome lineup pretty well through second and third edition? It's a possibility. I think it would open the door for more storytelling if we didn't have these four set Grand Alliances. But that's just my two cents.
I agree. Well, because, and you'll see with the storytelling sometimes, especially with ogres and fire slayers and even the ghouls, they've gone cross alliance at different points in the larger narratives. I think even, Mega Gargants, Sons of Behemoth, they've gone cross alliance as mercenaries. So there's definitely that room. I think they'll probably keep it anyways, but hopefully, story wise and gameplay wise, we can move away from it being so hard defined.
Right. Other than the Harbingers, I don't remember really seeing anything in third edition that really relied on your Grand Alliance.
No.
I'm talking rules-wise, rules mechanics.
Yeah. The only thing is, like, all of your allies, if you have them, are in your Grand Alliance.
That's okay, yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
But, yeah, so. That could go anywhere.
It could. Like, you could bring back the allies tables.
See, right? I love the allies tables.
I do, too. I love them, but they're, like, I mean, you can't play Warhammer and not love tables a little bit.
Right, exactly. Right.
Tables are the best. I still miss the chaos mutation tables, but you know,
right?
So use those.
Yeah.
Right, or animosity tables.
Yeah.
I was explaining to my son about greenskins, because we're still slowly working through the greatest saga of the greatest hero of the Mortal Realms, Gotrek.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
So we're at, what are we on now? Manslayer, I think. I mean, there's like 20 books or something in the Gotrek stories. But somewhere, I think the last one we listened to was Orc Slayer, and they were talking about orcs fighting amongst themselves and how they behave normally. And it had to explain to him, like, that used to be part of the game. Like, if you play greenskins or orcs and goblins back then, you know, yeah, your guys could do a lot of damage. But they could also just
flashbacks.
They could also just not listen to you and fight each other.
Number of times that I was like, all right, now this unit is going to charge. And then I roll a one and they go, oh, crap.
They're like, nope, no, they're not charging. Nope, they're going to fight you.
Like, I mean, I'm so happy I painted all these models and all this time just to bring them to a tournament. And then they would just sit there.
Yep.
The worst. And like, the worst was when you're sorry. I'm like, yeah.
I know we're going way off rabbit trail here, but
tables, love them.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, I guess we'll find out in a few days what Sigmar lied about.
That'll be awesome.
But until then, we can swing by the war room where we talk through the battles we face and chart the progress of our warlords. I know, Harry, you already talked to us about the games you were able to play at Warhammer World. Very jealous.
Yep.
but Paul and I also were able to get some games in, and we went a little wacky with it. We went very narrative with it, I should say.
Yes.
I'm here for it.
So for our games, I've been playing as my Flesh Eater Courts, and Paul, what have you been playing as?
I've been playing Cities of Sigmar, using my Harkiron stuff, just because I've been painting them, so I wanted to play with them. We just kind of went off the rails a bit, but it was more of, we had been reading the new books and the new narrative, and went, let's do something fun with that. So, we kind of just met, and then just started going, well, what do we want to do? Okay, well, what about this scene from the book? All right, let's just figure out how to make that work.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a lot of fun. And Will's much better at talking about the actual rules of it, but like, man, it was just a lot of fun to sit there and be like, all right, well, this thing happened. How do we make a rule for that? Well, this thing happened. How do we make a rule for that? Right? So now I'll let Will actually give you information as opposed to just enthusiasm.
Well, before you do that, what stories were you guys drawing on? What was your inspiration for these battles?
So, for the first battle, we were drawing on the inspiration from Dawnbringers IV, The Mad King Rises. Specifically, we thought that it would be a shame that I painted up Ushorin and we never actually used him in a Path to Glory battle because, you know, he can't be the general or the warlord and we were playing at low points. So we decided that we were going to do a boss battle.
Oh, nice.
It was 750 points, so we got rid of the rule that, like, you can't have a model that's worth more than half of your army value. Now, he was my centerpiece. He had a few units there to help out, but Paul's goal was to try to kill Ushorin. So the narrative that we were using is that he is my King Ashtar, King of the Yellow Cord, Master of Carcosa. And he just took over a settlement that was under Paul's control. So Paul's Harkuron Corsairs were coming up from the docks and from the beaches to kill him and root him out. Mm-hmm. And we almost had to change the rules immediately because it's like, oh, let's see if you can kill him or not. And in the first turn, he knocked him down to one wound left.
It was awesome. Like, <"Oop." laughs>
so cool. But then we realized that Ushorin is a vampire, and he gained a lot of wounds back. And he's got his big caveman stick and started beating people to death very quickly. Really showing why he was the big boss in the boss battle.
Yep.
And we had the rule that since I was killing things so quickly, Paul was able to bring them back. Mm-hmm. Coming back as like reinforcements coming in from the beach.
Oh, awesome.
But going from the story with the king's blood and people being corrupted as ghouls, he would roll a die. And on a one, they would actually be corrupted and change teams. And so after like the first two rounds, I killed the majority of his units. So four of them respawned. He rolled three ones.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man. Oh, man.
So the story became that he could not root him out. And a lot of those Corsairs are now waving the flag of King Ashtar and are now shipping the King's Blood.
Oh, wow.
Across the area.
Yeah. No.
So the King's Blood is, I know this is probably a spoiler, but since I haven't read the book, is that how the curse is spread?
So the way the ghoul curse is spread normally is a ghoul king will have his followers drink of his blood or eat of his flesh, basically consume him in some way. And that like does the full transformation. And like that's a good portion of how it spreads, but it works best on people who are already desperate.
Right.
And then you become
I knew it had to do with desperation and hopelessness.
Yeah. And so King's Blood is this perfectly fine wine that's not blood, we promise.
Totally not.
It is being shipped around to people who are unknowingly drinking it. But because there's not that proximity to Ushorin and they don't have that same emotional state, it takes a little bit longer
for
it to really take root.
Okay.
It's very cool and very interesting, and that's like how it's spreading.
Yeah. And this is previewed in the Dawnbringer's Tales as well as the book, or just the book itself?
A bit of both. It even pops up in White Dwarf a few times.
Oh, nice.
They've done a good job of seeding the threat of the King's Blood.
Right.
And even though we see that process and we officially know it's tied to Ushorin and Dawnbringer's Book 4, the King's Blood itself is a major threat and plot point in Dawnbringer's Book 5.
Mm-hmm.
So awesome.
Yeah.
If you want to find out more, check that one out.
Yeah. The game was legitimately one of my favorite games.
It was so fun.
I made a mistake by not getting I had an assassin whose job was to try and kill Ushorin, and I didn't get him close enough on the first round. And if I would have, I would have just completely obliterated him, but he
in
didn't
one turn.
Yeah, but he didn't have the movement bonus, and I rolled really well on my charges, and like it just everything was playing out perfect, and then he saved by one wound, and I was just like, no, so close, and then everything just fell apart. It was so much fun. So
it was a lot of fun, and I wrote up like a lot of the rules that we used to play it. Maybe after Adepticon gets wrapped up, this is not a promise, but I may transcribe it into a PDF and post it on the mortalrealms.com website for
that would be great
to do boss battles, because it was so much fun to bring like a big bad character in a small point game and really have that more personal feel in that fight.
Yeah.
Then the second game is very much directly tied to the story of Dawnbringer's Book 5, where there is a dam that the Cities of Sigmar soldiers are fighting over. And if they fail, basically corrupted water will spread everywhere and poison everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So we built some terrain of a dam that I controlled and using a version of the stronghold rules featured in the book, Paul was laying siege and having basically two almost off-camera cannons trying to bring the dam down as my ghouls were rushing out, trying to get to them and claw through the soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
What are these stronghold rules you're talking about?
Yeah, so...
Weird. Weird. There's a new cool thing.
Yeah, there's a new cool thing. I'll get to that in a second. Just that, to finish the battle.
Okay, yeah.
Basically, there were two sections of the dam. They each had hit points. And we had a rule of like, oh yeah, you know, if they're both still standing, I would win. If they both fall, Paul would win. Then we realized, what if there's one and one? So we changed it to... The two objectives were tearing down the dam, and then his assassin and my Gore Warden would be having like an honor duel off to the side. Because there's a cool scene where the Gore Warden grabs someone and they kind of fight in the air.
Hmm.
What were you going to say, Paul?
So you remember challenges from Warhammer Fantasy Battles?
Oh, yeah.
I just really wanted to do a challenge. Yeah. So we made up rules to be able to do a challenge.
But the cool thing is the dam was built by ghouls, so of course, if I killed one of Paul's units, they would drop building supplies
mm-hmm.
that they had inside of them. And we would roll 2d6, and it would drop a token with that value, and the ghouls could take that token back to the wall to repair it.
Okay.
And so at the end of the game, both parts of the dam were still standing, but only because one group of ghouls were able to bring supplies back and it survived by one wound because of that.
Mm-hmm.
Paul did a really good job of, even though I would kill his guys, he would lock down the ghouls in combat so they couldn't bring the supplies in so the cannons could do their damage uninterrupted.
Nice.
But he did win the challenge. So the final battle is a draw.
Mm-hmm.
The dam is still standing, but there is no one manning it. So now there is just this dam full of poisoned water that is a wild card now in our story.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. No, it was again a lot of fun and really exciting to just like the stories are my favorite part anyway. So to just come up with something that was a fun story and then to have it actually be a fun game was awesome. Because as we were working through this one, I was just like, I mean, I don't even see how this is going to be a fun game, kind of, because like I feel like I'm just going to destroy the walls and then the game will be over. And then like, what's the fun in that? All right, well, let's do this and let's do that, you know, right? So and it turned out, again, being an absolutely fantastic close game where everything was hanging in the balance quite often. And I tell you, if, you know, you had not messed with my cannons and given me, like, you know, corpse parts instead of cannonballs, it wouldn't have been an issue whatsoever.
It could have worked.
It could have worked. It was a brilliant plan.
Yeah, I would say of the years I was playing, I think this game is the one where we had the most, like, we were the most unsure about whether or not it was going to work. And it did. And it was fantastic. And I'm really happy with it.
Yeah.
And on that note, if we want to look at the stronghold strong points, we're just going to do a quick transition over to the library, where we ponder the latest Path to Glory material from Games Workshop and come up with narrative ideas to field it. So Dawnbringers, Book 5. Forget the actual name. I just call it Crone Book.
Get it?
I got it. It's Shadow of the Crone. There we go.
Yeah, there it is.
The big rules that it added on top of the classic Army of Renown is the introduction of strong points. And they've been doing this cool thing where the strong points themselves are added in basically the section of core rules. So it's just a thing that exists. Match play, Path to Glory, open play, strong points are here.
Very cool.
And the way strong points work is there's a number of special terrain features called strong point terrain features that come with war scrolls and special rules. This terrain already exists. It's the Guardian Idol, which came in the Dawnbringers terrain set, the Nexus Siphon from that same thing, the big cleansing aqualith that they have. There's the Shattered Temple terrain that had come out in second edition for the Storm Vaults. There's a domicile shell, which is just like the walls. And then they brought back the classic, the Baleful Realm Gate, which I don't even know if it's available anymore. It has been out of stock for a while.
It is difficult to find. I remember talking about how I had to travel halfway across the country to find that model.
But each of these terrain features, they have a wound characteristic, a save value, special rules, and then they even have what is known as a resource value. Because now when you're putting down this terrain, there is a cost to it. It's not like everyone can bring one piece of faction terrain for free that will make or break your army. No, you can bring this terrain. There is a cost and a maximum value to it of some sort. It's not like a points cost, but you can't just bring everything, which is super nice.
Okay. So kind of like fortifications in Warhammer 40,000.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know exactly how those work, so I probably shouldn't say exactly, but...
Yeah, you take them like units.
Yeah, the general vibe.
Oh, quick note for the listeners. While the Baleful Realm Gate may be difficult to find, they are releasing a new... I think that's the Starfire Pylon, which is part of the Warcry terrain.
Yeah.
That would probably work as a pretty good realm gate.
That would be a great realm gate. They also added Realmscape objectives, which is they had that objective marker box at the beginning of the edition. Now each one of those pieces has a special rule attached to it, which I know they did with the second edition objectives that they came out with. So it took them a while, but they finally got around to it. The core battle plan for this is really just trying to tear down the objectives and the strong point terrain. The defender can basically place one in each small quarter of their territory, and the attacker is just trying to bring it down, and it just creates a fun little like defend your strong point battle plan.
Mm-hmm.
The real fun stuff comes in the Path to Glory and the match play sections. Path to Glory, it adds this onto the overarching story that has been going on through the Dawnbringer books. And there's a fun little thing at the end of this section where it says, after you're done playing through the fourth chapter in book 5, you will then be able to continue on to the final chapter in the next book.
So there is a book 6.
Maybe. Maybe not. But the book says there is a book 6.
The book says there's a book 6, but there has not yet been announced the book 6.
Interesting.
So that's fun. Yeah.
Unless the next chapter is in the core book.
Yeah, because it just says
fourth that, edition.
Yeah, the next... There will be a final chapter for the Crusade.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, so that's fun. But yeah, so this chapter of the story is you founding your city, because in the narrative of the book, both Crusades go on to get their cities founded.
Both of them, huh?
Both of them. Although we debate whether or not Emberguard is founded in the previous book on the Mortal Realm story phase episode. So
okay. Interesting.
But yeah, in this book they both get founded. Do they stay founded? Tune in later to find out.
But they start the process. Story phase.
Yeah, check out the story phase.
It might be helpful.
They start the process of founding the cities, I should say. And so this does that. You found your city. But they have additional changes from what is in the Cities of Sigmar book, which is you get to get a quirk for your city and you get to get the strong points and actually like build the terrain for your city.
Oh, which cool.
Is way cool. Like,
yeah,
it's exactly what I want in the narrative of these Dawnbringer Crusades.
Right.
The city building. We're finally doing it.
That's awesome.
Some of the quirks are pretty cool, but it's mostly based on like defining your city. So you could start with a realm gate, but it is damaged, so you need to spend resource points to bring it up. And you basically have a lot of, they call them, like, rules-wise, ruins, because that's just, like, not fully completed. So mm-hmm. you basically start the foundations of your city, and as you play games, you will get the resources to fully build it out. And they have a city roster for you to fill out. But the cool thing, since we were just talking about tables, is the way battles are now fought for this section of it, which is you have the custodian, the person who has the city, and then the invader, the person attacking it. Each of you get to make a choice of what you want to do that turn. The custodian can choose to hold their ground. They could send someone out to range, or they can do a counterattack. And then the invaders can either scout territory, raid territory, or attack the strong point.
Okay.
And then you check the table and check the matrix to see, well, if I chose this and he chose that, we're fighting forgotten relics.
Gotcha.
And it will pick your battle plan for you and even give an advantage to one of the players.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
So a little bit of strategy ahead of time.
Yeah, a little bit of strategy ahead of time, that rock, paper, scissors. And the thing is, there's another table after, which is what the result of the battle is versus who had advantage. So yeah, if you give your opponent the advantage, they're more likely to win. But if you are the underdog and you claim that victory, the glory is so much greater and way mm-hmm. more worth it for you.
Mm-hmm.
And then the aftermath is just doing that resource management, building your city, maintaining, repairing, and taking care of everything. That's awesome. It's a really cool, like, I love this idea, and I don't think there's anything inherent to this Path to Glory section that says it can only be Cities of Sigmar, because while the terrain is like Cities of Sigmar themed terrain,
right,
everyone gets to use it in the other modes of play. If you're playing open play, anyone can take that stuff. If you're doing the match play, anyone can take that stuff.
So outside of narrative play, this is for everyone, but building on the narrative play that we've seen in the previous Dawnbringers books, this is really telling that story of new Cities of Sigmar being founded.
Yeah. I just want to see people like take the city management section and do their like Karngrad from the 8 points.
Right.
You get your Slaves of Darkness folks building out and maintaining their weird city, or the Oryx taking care of their war camp, or the Lumineth doing their thing.
Yep.
And I want to see it. I want to see people do these conversions and build these out.
I'm sure it'll be incredible.
Yeah. And unlike a lot of things that we see in narrative play, I think we really will actually see this. Because the match play section, even though we don't normally talk about match play, is beneficial to anyone that is trying to run an event.
Right.
Because what the match play section is a balanced, strong point-based, team-based event pack. So, 4 players to a team, and you basically get to do your cool matchups based on like attacking each other's strong points.
Nice.
They even have optional rules in here that are very narrative focused. One of the optional rules is in your team, everyone needs to be the same Grand Alliance. Okay. With the exception of Fire Slayers, Ulgrimmar Tribes, and Sons of Bahamut armies, because they can be mercenaries.
Huh.
So you could do like a narrative event of like, all right, everyone pick a Grand Alliance and go. Here we've got Order, and they've hired out some Mega Gargants to fight for them as well.
Right.
And the way the team aspect works is the 4 battlefields are like Team A strong point, Team B strong point, and then the east and west flanks. And you go around and you assign your players to oh, you know what? This person, their army is really good at defense, so we're going to put them at our strong point defending it. Mm-hmm. Here we've got Mega Gargants who destroy terrain. They're going to attack team like the opponent's strong point. And really fun way of playing that out. And it is match play focused, but there's no reason this is not a narrative event that someone could run.
Oh, that's awesome. I mean, it just, it helps take that lift off of an event organizer and, yeah. and so that they can still run a really fun narrative based event, but all the hard work of figuring out how to match people up, how to create that reason for these battles occurring is already done.
Yep. It's already done. And because it's official, you tend to have more buy-in for a lot of this stuff too.
Yeah, absolutely.
And even they even come with like core battalions that are about like, oh, these people are defenders. If they're in your territory, you're good. Here, your artillery does more damage against the strong points and things like really playing into the idea of it being a siege battle. And then there's just a lot of cool battle plans that go into that.
Like, these books have just added so much to, like, it's a little shame that their Cities of Sigmar focused, but with a little bit of creativity, right? You can do everything.
Yep.
Because there is so much, like, they're just creating a whole new universe of rules and a whole new way of looking at the game that didn't exist before.
Mm-hmm.
Which is just absolutely amazing.
Yeah. And, like, they have definitely been Cities of Sigmar focused, but really, if we're looking at it, Harbingers was for everybody. Dawnbringers, Book 2, Reign of the Brute, it was very Cities focused. But it had all the different armies of renown.
Right.
Book 3, again, very Cities focused. Also just had armies of renown. But Books 4 and 5 mm-hmm. have come up with battle packs that are available for everybody. So they really have been honing in on bringing toys for everybody to play with, which is really nice. And that's outside of the Army of Renown structure.
Right.
Just so good.
So I have another question.
Yeah.
And you may edit this up if it's in the wrong place. But for book five. a question about book five.
Yeah.
About Shadow of the Crone.
Yes.
It, being released at the same time, they have these spearheads. A spearhead Cities of Sigmar, spearhead Stormcast Eternals, and Spearhead Flesh Eater Courts. Are those in that book? Or is that just a coincidence they're releasing them at the same time?
I think that's just a coincidence.
Okay.
They've renamed the ones that are releasing, but we don't know why they're renaming them. So.
Right. So we had Vanguards mm-hmm. before.
Yep.
And now we're having Spearheads. I know we had Combat patrols and boarding patrols before the edition changed for Warhammer 40,000, and combat patrols became a very important thing for pickup games in the new edition. Yeah. I'm wondering if spearheads are going to be something similar, but I didn't know if the format was part of the Dawnbringers book.
Yeah, it's not in the Dawnbringers books. I know they had a Warcom article that was like, it was just like a parenthetical at the bottom. Like, oh yeah, by the way, spearheads are the new vanguards. Like, that's as much context and information that we have, unfortunately. Okay. But there's nothing in these books. I would say the only real connection is like Flesh Eater Courts and Cities both released recently, and they both are factions in this book, but the spearhead structure itself is unrelated.
Right. Okay. So
it could be that they released those either to offload stock, or they're releasing them because even if Spearhead isn't tied into this, those armies are.
Right. Well, and now you have a new way to get that Archregent, which is
yeah, awesome.
Along with all the other new models that they've just released.
Yeah, I still need to pick up a unit of the Morpheg Knights because they just look so cool.
They do.
Yeah, no. Mm-hmm. So, all right.
Yeah. And then just the two final things that came with the book are Krithusa and her Army of Renown, which is super cool because it opens the door for playing Daughters of Cain without Marathi.
Right.
Kind of tying in, maybe this is a scry. I think this opens the door of if they do bring in Malarian, it's not a new army. It is, oh, Daughters of Cain become Shadow Elves. Because now we have those who worship Marathi, those who worship Morai Heg, and then those who could worship Malarian.
Yeah, and honestly, as you guys know, my son's a huge fan of elves. Yeah. And he's always liked the Shadowstalkers side of the Daughters of Cain, but he's not a huge fan of like the witch elves and all of them.
Yep.
So now he sees the possibility of actually playing that army with one of their heroes, because even though Krithusa is a girl, he is willing to take that because it's a Shadowstalker type focused army. Yeah.
Well, and it's also got a really bunch of cool bonuses for the Doomfire Warlocks. So yeah, we're seeing those guys come in and do a lot of cool stuff too. And I think that's why I'm really excited and adding it to my Shadow Stalkers, because I just like the idea of it being like, because they're kind of outcast in the Daughters of Cain society. So
Being
the underdogs is kind of fun.
Right. Yeah. And it's nice to have an option for the faction if you're not a huge fan of Marathi. Because, I mean, everything before, like, it's called Daughters of Cain, but it's basically like Marathi and Friends was how that army played. And this at least gives you a good option.
That sounds like an 80s gem spinoff. Marathi and Friends.
Marathi and Friends.
Well, it's the Saturday morning kids cartoon for Warhammer Plus.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I still think that they should have a Skaven one that's more kid focused, and you just have two clan rats who plan to take over the world.
Yeah.
Every time.
Stinky well, in the frame.
Yeah, one can be really dumb and one can be really smart. And they're just foiled every time. It would make a great show.
So they might even have the two characters already, because there's a short story they put out on Warhammer Community about two Skaven rivals who hated each other, and they would team up to kill big bad guys, but then they would try to betray each other, but then team up to take out their warlord, and then try to betray each other. The story ends in the cliffhanger of they were approached by one of the Skaven demons. I never know
their Vermin Lord. Names.
Vermin Lord. They're just like, hey, I've got a job for you.
Man.
They could just take those two guys and make that cartoon out of them.
Right. Absolutely. Like, you don't even have to be that original with the plot every week. Like, we don't need like high level storytelling here. I just need like some crazy slapstick Skaven action every Saturday morning.
Yeah.
To watch. Yeah.
You can make it 10 minutes long and have 20 minutes of commercials for Warhammer of commercials. Products.
Yeah, just advertise the latest releases.
Every other moment on screen, one rocket is firing towards something else. It's literally just contrails of vapor crossing Blight City over and over again. That's it.
It would be amazing.
Oh,
it would
be so good. And then the other very notable release is just Callus and Tol and the Saviors of Cinderfall.
Oh, yeah.
Which are a regiment of renown, so any Order army can take them. And it's so just... good. It's Callus and Tol themselves are the pinnacle of witch hunters in this game.
Mm-hmm.
With bonuses against wizards and demons, like firewood stakes to kill heroes, all this cool stuff. But then they're bringing in new companions who just give them a lot of cool bonuses, like spawning inside of a terrain piece anywhere. And
had we seen all of these characters in the Hammer and Bolter episode? I know the one, the thief type character,
just the thief character. Okay. The other two, whose names I know and not reading, are Mistress Verentia, who is like, she's like the reader of the weave, and like a spy master, and has an army of cats that she controls, is new. And then
cats.
Right? Like, she's got a cool cat and she can see through their eyes.
My son thinks she's a robot because half her face is covered in metal and her hand. But
I would not be surprised if they started making this character and they thought to themselves, wait, we're not doing any rogue trader armies anytime soon. Quick pivot.
Right.
Let's.
I mean, it's an incredibly characterful model.
It's so good. Like, it's straight out of like Necromunda rogue trader, but very, she still has like the old school Free Guild puffy shoulders.
So
you have that Hammerhall history on her model, which is super nice. But she's new. And then Valius, the Keeper Axion, is new.
Mm-hmm.
And the narrative for him is super cool because he is, you know, he's got the key to the city, literally.
Literally.
He can walk through any door in Hammerhall and pop out in a different door in Hammerhall. Like, that's such a weird thing to have, but it's awesome.
And he has a loyal Griffhound.
Yes.
Who, ironically, is named Balthus.
Right?
We've never heard that name before. Like, that's a completely new name that is made up just specifically for this miniature. I don't know what you're talking about.
Never.
So again, my son speculates, like, what if Balthus got reforged
as a
Griffhound?
Maybe Balthus is what that trailer is about.
Oh my god.
He turned me into a dog.
He's just turning people back. He's turning dogs into Stormcast and Stormcast into dogs.
Oh, man. I'm just imagining you have one human followed by like 17 dogs Stormcast. He's like, good boy, come here.
So our Griffhound's going to become the new, like, there are no wolves on Fenris.
Right, yeah. Like,
there are no Griffhounds in Axion or in Azir.
Oh, man.
That'd be perfect.
Like, you heard it here first, folks. There are no Griffhounds in Azir.
Well, and what is it? In the Soul Wars book, there was like... Sage Mutt's going to get mad at us. There was like the Master of Cats, like a weird cat deity. So here we have another Balthus teaming up with another Master of Cats, but in a different city.
Mm-hmm. I do hope that they continue the theme of like cats being like having warding powers against ghosts.
I love it. Yeah.
That's an incredible bit of narrative that just needs to stay in Age of Sigmar.
So they can finally remake like the scene from The Mummy, but instead of Brendan Fraser, it's Hamilcar. But it's actually still Brendan Fraser just as Hamilcar.
I'm here for it. Absolutely. I do want to point out on the one member of the gang here that we have seen, the crypt robber Lissa Ravenia.
Yeah.
That they made sure to sculpt the skull that she carries.
That's super nice. Because if
you've seen the episode, and I'm not going to spoil it, that skull is really useful.
A little bit.
Yeah. Super bit.
And very dark. Very dark.
Very. Other fun modeling note. So Callus has like a big skull belt around him that has a keyhole on it. And then the Keeper Action has a big key.
Uh-huh.
So that means they're dating, right? Like,
well, it's not the only key. I mean, there's a whole gang. There's a key hanging off of his sword. The cat lady has a key in her hair.
There's a lot of keys in here.
So they're gonna need a bowl.
I figure like they're all just keys to that belt, so that way if Callus if he needs to go to the bathroom, just someone has to hand him the key like he's at a gas station.
Are you saying that we have a keymaster and a gatekeeper in AOS now? Because that's what I'm hearing right now.
Oh, man.
No, there is only Zool.
That's the name of the Griffhound. Wait, no, that's not right.
But yeah, that brings us to the end of our prepared notes. Do either of you have anything else y'all want to add?
Now I am just excited. Like, they keep pushing the story forward. I'm excited to see what happens. Obviously, they keep teasing us with more incredible models, and now this big hint.
This big video. Lie that will be.
Yeah.
I have no idea, man. What this is. I really want to know.
I know. Guess you're going to have to go to the preview at Adepticon.
Yeah, I was already planning on it, but now I have to.
Yeah, now you have to.
It's Eternus. I'm telling you, it's Eternus. It's obvious.
It's what it has to be, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I like Rebel Stormcast. That's pretty... I think it ties the closest to what we see in that teaser.
Yeah. I just think that Rebel Stormcast do have a problem in the Grand Alliance structure.
Yeah, because where do they go?
Right. Like, where do you put them at that point?
And what happens when they die?
Well, that's, yeah.
Yeah. That's the question.
It's another question.
I'm a rebel until that part of me gets taken out of me when I'm reforged. And then I'm just a good guy again. It's fine. It's totally fine.
Maybe, you know, maybe it's a combination of both. Because the lie could be only Sigmar can reforge Stormcast. Because we've seen it with Eternus. And so maybe Rebel Stormcast found a way.
Well, we also know that Grugni taught Sigmar how to reforge because he's been reforging Grombrindle since long before the old world was destroyed.
Yeah. I can't wait. But we'll have to, unfortunately.
Yep.
Because, well, dear listeners, our fire has at last burned down to embers and we must take to the path once more. If you'd like to keep us company on the road, Harry, where can they find you online?
Anymore, the best place to find me is either going to be in the Discord, where I am either Harry or Buddy C. I don't recall which screen name I use there, but you can find me. Definitely in the Path to Glory room or community on our Discord server. And then on Instagram, you'll find me posting pictures from time to time, and I'm on there as Toy Soldier Fun Harry.
Paul, where can they find you online?
At PJ Shard.
And I'm Will, and you can find me on Blue Sky at Sever. But as always, the best place to find any of us is on themortalrealms.com/Discord, because I... feels like I never leave, and I'm always there. And with that, thank you for listening, and we'll see you again real soon.